Welcome back, guys. DGS 405. Happy Wednesday to you. Time for the priest and the rabbi. We are down one priest. And need an old priest and a young priest.
I can't do both sides.
No, I know you can't. No, there was some traffic on the rabbi's way in, so I'm sure he'll be here momentarily. But it's okay. I want to start with you anyway. And this is a very timely question, a bit of an existential question, but I think an important one with what's going on with Israel and Gaza and anti-Semitism and such. Can you talk about the similarities and the differences between Judaism and Israel, the country?
Yeah. you know, the amount of Israel was formed originally as a secular Jewish state. It was a, kind of almost on socialist kinds of, you know, the kibbutzim. And it wasn't really in any way a religious state in any way. It was... But of course, the Jewish religion views Israel as the promised land and as the holy land, and so there's always been there this kind of friction. A lot of people from the outside really probably would have a very hard time understanding what goes on in Israel because there's just so many different factions. But so there's Israel, the state of Israel. And then there's Israel as the religious homeland to the religious people. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in Israel, the old city of Jerusalem, which is right next to the Kotel, the Wailing Wall, as it's called. So the secular state wanted to make that into a artist colony. They saw this idea of this beautiful artist colony and then the Kotel there. And it was a complete failure. And the reason was because who's going to pay a premium to be next to the Wailing Wall? Religious Jews or artists? And so,
here we go.
And so, there are two different kinds of things there, and there's about a million opinions about it.
Yeah.
The religious community has a lot of various opinions about it.
Yeah.
And so it's a big topic. Like, you know, there's Israel, the Medina, the country, and then there's what it represents to the Jewish mm-hmm. people. And there's a lot of friction within Israel on that.
This is a very difficult question to answer, but I think, again, it's an important question. When people, especially with what's going on with Gaza since October 7th with the Hamas attack, when people don't like the way Netanyahu handles things, and I know a lot of Jewish people who don't like the way that Netanyahu handles things, when does it creep in for you personally into anti-Semitism if someone says, oh, Netanyahu, he's the worst prime minister that Israel's ever had, or the way that Israel is prosecuting the war is not the right way to do it? When for you do your hackles go up and you feel this is getting anti-Semitic?
Right. Well, I mean, I assume for the most part when Jewish people do it, it's not anti-Semitic.
Sure.
I'd like to assume that in the most part. I sometimes don't know what I should say and what I shouldn't say also. I think like when I see even American politicians treating Netanyahu badly or refusing to show up to hear him speak, you know, I look at it, he's the democratic leader of a country that is in an existential war for survival. And whether you like him or not, you know, I just find it difficult to believe that would be done to the German chancellor or
respect.
Yeah, it's just we can treat this country with. But let me give you this. This is something that's rolled around in my head to try to define exactly what you're talking about. You know, if two kids go to school, you have an African-American kid go to school and a white kid go to school, and they're passing nasty notes to each other, and the white kid gets a warning and the African-American kid gets suspended for 3 days. And those kinds of things keep happening. So after a little while, you kind of think, you know, there's something more to this than, you know, something's wrong. And so what I would say to you is like this is, you know, everybody, of course, has the right to criticize Israel and their policies. That's free. But when there's an utter double standard, when other countries, you know, when we were attacked on 9/11, we went to Afghanistan. And there was a lot of civilian casualties. No one even, if I'd ask most of you, do you even know how many there were?
No.
Yeah. In Iraq, it was 200,000.
Do you know what it was
in Afghanistan? No, but it's probably more than that.
But my point is like this is people don't even know.
Yeah.
And so why is it all of a sudden that, you know, we're believing this Hamas organization's account, which is much smaller than what's happened in other conflicts? And, you know, when when the war in Yemen happened and the Saudis starved to death, why wasn't South America, South Africa taking them to the international courts? Why wasn't there claims of genocide? So what I'm saying is, yes, everybody has a right to criticize Israel, but when you see a total double standard, when you see like this is being treated for some reason completely differently than if it was any one of these other conflicts. The conflict going on in Gaza is one of the smaller conflicts going on in the world right now with fewer casualties. If you look at Yemen, you look at Syria, you know, there are these Muslim extremists are killing in the millions of Muslims. If you count Syria and Yemen alone, look at Sudan, right? But for some reason, when it's Israel, all of a sudden, you know, the whole... So that's where I would say that makes my antennas go up and say there's something very wrong here. And unfortunately, I think, I think a lot of the people involved are not, let's say in our government, are not anti-Semitic. I'm not accusing them of being anti-Semitic. But I do think that they're falling into, for perhaps even political reasons, joining in with things that are anti-Semitic. You know, I think praising these protesters at the schools, that's wrong because they should be protesting Hamas, right? Hamas is the one that attacked. You know, when Hamas attacked Israel, this is not like a tricky thing. Everybody knew they were hiding behind civilians in order to get civilians. This was transparent. This isn't like an secret trick. So when you fall for that, that's what they're counting on. When they do that, they're counting on you to condemn Israel now for that's, you know, Iran and Hamas, they're laughing at us. They're saying, yeah, see, it worked. And I want to say one other thing about it is it puts Gazans at risk. And the reason is because what you've basically shown is that using people as human shields will work. And when you do that, you just endanger more. So that's where I'd say, from the way I look at it, that it crosses into anti-Semitism when there's a complete double standard. If it was even across the board, I could accept, you know. And I think that Netanyahu is, I understand there's lots of Israelis that can't stand the guy, tons. You know, Israel has a vibrant democracy, and there's tons of protesting. You don't need other people to protest Netanyahu. It's being done in Israel. Mm-hmm. And you brought that up the very beginning of the war. You were asking me, you know, what's going to happen there? You know, are there going to be critiques? And there's going to be, and there is. But I think, though, that here, I think he should be treated as a head of state and not demeaned. Yeah.
Fair answer. Monsignor's here. Good to see you. Ted, how are you?
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good to see you.
Rabbi Andre. Kevin, Rachel, good afternoon. Shalom.
Yeah.
Shalom.
It's Razor.
Did you run into some traffic?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Highway 64 and 40 in its usual condition as a parking lot.
Yeah.
It alternates as a highway.
Yes. one thing I want to talk to you guys about, which is holistic and both of you can speak to this, is the current state of life. You see it in politics played out every single day, but we see it in life as well. The temperature just seems to be higher than it was 10, 20 years ago, at least my memory of life. How do we disagree? What is the Judeo-Christian way of disagreeing with your fellow man or your wife or your husband or your best friend or a stranger, whether it's over politics or current events or something else? Because the way we're doing it now can't be the right way.
That's for sure. It's not working out. I just was reading something today, and it reminded me, you talk about a person who tried to bring harmony to society and gave up his life trying it, besides Jesus Christ and a lot of other people, but contemporary to my time, Dr. King. And, you know, one of his big statements, where he was into nonviolent resistance. And unfortunately, that seems to have been lost in the current age. Nonviolent resistance has achieved a lot over time. Going back to Mahatma Gandhi and what Dr. King tried to do. And then, you know, one of his favorite sayings to try to bring harmony to people, which now it does not have much cachet in society, is people should be judged by the content of their character. But, I mean, unfortunately, you're asking what can be done. It all has to do with the frame of reference of how do we even look at each other. We might say in a more fundamental sense, what do we think is our fundamental relationship to each other? In our Christian tradition, we say the fundamental relationship is that we all have this same relationship to God as part of the body of Jesus Christ. We call it the mystical body of Christ. We're all created. But another problem besides nonviolent resistance not being upheld and this the people being judged by the way that they look, you're good or bad, by the people claiming to be less racist, actually are judging people by what race they're for. They're either good or bad or whatever, if they don't agree with them politically. So there's so many ways that people are choosing to be divided in society by having the fundamental definition of themselves go beyond our fundamental relationship as human beings.
I am not big on shadow governments or Illuminati or conspiracy theories, but I do feel like, especially in the last 20, 25 years, that a lot of our disagreements are artificial, that we're being played, whether it's by factions of the government, political parties, the media, certainly the media, my chosen profession. And that makes it even worse. It's one thing if, Ted, you and I have an honest disagreement and we go at it and we debate and we work it out. It's another if the rabbi caused it or if Kevin Wheeler gets in there and gets between us. It's even more sad.
I was just going to say is I my humble opinion, a lot of the troubles that we're having, I don't think it's on purpose, but I think it is the media, because when you and I were kids, we all watched Walter Cronkite and we all got the same information. And then we all made decisions based on that information. And when CNN and these, they came out with the constant, this 24-hour news cycle. So it has to become entertainment now. How do you keep people every 18 minutes watching the same thing? And so what's happened is everyone's got their own news, and you each side is telling the other side that the other side's evil. They're demonic, and if you think that, you're evil. And, you know, my wife in her therapy practice, she finds that her clients tell her that they think that the other side is literally evil. And so, you know, I'm just going to mention, in Judaism, it says that we're all about arguing, you know, fighting it out. The Talmud is full of arguments, but it says that a fight that's for the sake of heaven will continue forever and has a lasting, and those people love each other in the end and just agree to disagree. But when it's not for the sake of truth, it's ultimately, I think a lot of times it's ego is involved, self-interest, you know, other things get involved, and it's not really trying to find out what's really good or right. It's getting what I want done. And so those kinds of fights end up just, you know, going on forever.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Guys, DGS 423, Priest and Rabbi. I've been doing this for the better part of 25 years now. Monsignor Ted and Rabbi Shmuel. Monsignor, you wanted to continue talking about the nexus, the Venn diagram, the interplay between religion and politics.
Sure. Yeah. The religion doesn't belong trying to control politics, but the role of religion is to shape the lives of the individual people. And so if it's doing its best, it's helping form people's consciences according to what our ultimate principles or ultimate values. In our case, it's the values that Jesus Christ taught, the values of the gospel. And we believe that if that shapes the minds and hearts and souls of the individual believers, then in turn, their individual engagement will help shape societies. When there's too close of a marriage between any particular religious tradition and a particular political party, that's where the problems emerge. So it's like some people say, oh, I don't want to get involved in politics. We preach people need to be more involved in politics, because that does what a rabbi was talking about when we were off the air, is shaping community. Hmm. It's without people's involvement, then who shapes community? Everybody, the masterminds running the media, trying to manipulate our minds, they're the ones who run society. So Without that engagement, then society gets shaped by these ephemeral sources. But it can be shaped by individual people. It takes a lot of guts to get involved nowadays. I can see why people don't. But at the, there was a saying I was taught as a kid, better to light one candle than curse the darkness. In fact, driving here today, I saw with some of the homeless people downtown here, it's similar to that visiting the hospital. There's some guy out there giving haircuts to the the street people.
It's nice.
So it's beautiful, right? It's that. So is the street, is homeless people a terrible problem? Yes. Have people tried a lot of things? Yes. Has any of it solved all the problems? No. But there's somebody doing something.
A real thing. Yeah.
Right.
Someone making
a real
difference.
So to me, that's what it comes down to. And I actually, probably because of the church community that I'm part of, I see that kind of stuff all day, every day.
3 minutes left, Rabbi. Let me give it to you to talk about what you talked about, that we don't have community like we used to.
Well, I was telling this to some of the people I was teaching this Sunday, is that, you know, in the end, we're going to have our political involvement. We're going to vote, whatever, we're going to be involved. But and many of us are going to end up frustrated at the end of that. Some of us will have this momentary feeling of joy that our candidate won, or that might be. But the fact of the matter is that what's going to bring us much more joy in life, and a way that we can make a much bigger difference in life, is to actually do something. Is to, you know, I was saying, like, in you know, it used to be like, and it still is in our synagogues, and I'm sure it's similar, is that when, let's say, somebody needs help, the community helps. You know, you see, you walk into the synagogue and you see a person who, a kid, his shoes are old, and go to the rabbi. This family maybe needs some help, and we all helped each other. And I think a lot of people nowadays, the community there is to help you when you need help, and for you to help others. There was a lady that told me, she said, I don't go to synagogue anymore because I don't get anything from it. So I said, great, then you can give. Perfect. That's right. It. That's the perfect. You're
even better.
Right. Even better. And so the point being is that I think that people feel very isolated. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people nowadays with the computers and the cell phones. You can't even meet anybody anymore. If you walk into a coffee shop, everyone's got their phone in front of them or their. But when you live in a community, now I'll tell you something else about the Jewish Sabbath, is you have to turn your cell phone and your computer off for a day. So it actually helps with that. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that being involved in a community is something that we're meant to be that way. We're hardwired
social
for that.
Social animals.
And when we're deprived of that, and I think that's a lot what's happening, this isolation, the being in a community. You know, I would really recommend people one way or another to be part of a community. And I mean an in-person community, because it gives you the opportunity to give. It gives you the opportunity when need be to take. But that's sadly missing now from so many people's lives. And I think it's part of the bad feelings, and it gives you the opportunity to give, to be givers. And that's, we need that. It's not just, we're not going to get everything that we want out of entertainment. You know, I always tell people, if you have the opportunity between being entertained or doing something good, choose doing something good. Your body is going to tell you, choose the entertainment. Mm-hmm. Your soul is going to tell you, choose to do something good. Yeah. And when you do it, you know you'll feel better, even though you have to get yourself off the couch or whatever you have to do, right? So I'm just saying is, not to get so caught up in this in this political thing in the end. To work. Like, if you spend one day of misery from the whole political situation, how much is a day worth? How much do you pay at the end of your life for a day?
Yeah.
You've torn up $1 billion. And over what? And so don't let this bring you down. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be, but get out there and do good, and you will feel good about it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.